Thanks for watching. This is the third in our series on China, its place in the Bible and history. And now we're coming to China's 100 years of humiliation. China itself refers to this time in its history as a period of humiliation nationally from about 1840 until the end of the Second World War. Now, we've looked at China as being amongst the 70 nations of Genesis chapter 10. We've seen that China is actually descended from the Canaanites and the Sinites, being the eighth son, Sin, of Canaan. They've inherited the curse placed upon the Canaanites in the early chapters of Genesis. And after the Tower of Babel, they were scattered right away to the far east. Their role under the curse that was placed upon them through Noah by God is to be servants of servants down through history. And they've developed as servants remarkable strengths and skills, which are quite unique to them and really quite significant in their current situation today. Now they're attempting to break out of that curse of servitude. What we saw was that after the flood in Genesis chapter 10, there is a list there of the 70 nations which came from the three sons of Noah. And the son Ham had four sons, and the youngest of those was Canaan, and from his 11 sons came the Sinites. In Genesis chapter 9, after the disgraceful incident that is recorded there, a curse comes upon Canaan by Noah, and Canaan is to be a servant of servants unto his brethren. Not only so, but he becomes a servant of Shem and a servant of Japheth. Shem representing the Semitic people, largely today the Jews and the Arabs, and Japheth largely the European countries. And in Genesis chapter 10, we read that after the 11 sons of Canaan are born and develop, among whom was the Sinites, afterwards were the families of the Canaanites spread abroad. That's, of course, as a result of the scattering of the various peoples of the earth after the Tower of Babel incident in Genesis chapter 11. So the Sinites are scattered abroad to the land of Sinim, and this seems to have taken place just before 2000 BC, before Abraham came down into the area of the land of Canaan, the land of promise, in about 2000 BC. Just prior to that, the Sinites were scattered abroad across to the land of Sinim, as we've seen in our two earlier episodes. So the early history of China begins, according to the history books, around about the year 2070 BC, when the first significant population was recorded in the land we know today as China. So with China's 100 years of humiliation, we are looking in the early part of that period, beginning in about 1840, at the Opium Wars and the loss of Hong Kong to the British, then this terrible civil war which took place in the 1850s, resulting from an attempt by some in China to establish Christianity. Christianity has never been really a comfortable place to be in the country of China. Completely different culture, completely different religious beliefs and values. In the 1890s, we'll be seeing the first Sino-Japanese War, which resulted in the loss of Taiwan to the Japanese. Let's go back then and look now at the Opium Wars. The background of the Opium Wars was that Great Britain had established the British East India Company in about the year 1600. It had continued to trade and bring goods from the East back to Britain. And ultimately, a trade was established between the British East India Company and China in enormous quantities of opium that was grown in India and traded with the Chinese people for silk and porcelain and especially tea. And these products were shipped back to Great Britain. And the trade resulted in huge amounts of opium being traded to China. And with the advent of tobacco smoking from the Americas, some countries started experimenting with the smoking of opium. And in China, the men in particular developed an insatiable craving for the smoking of opium. and they became totally addicted to it. Up to 25% of the population, much of the army, the defense people in China, became addicted to opium, and of course as a result the whole effects were totally disastrous, physically and socially. But the British merchants kept on trading the opium grown in India, huge profits there, and even after China declared the import of opium to be illegal. So came the Opium Wars. Two main battles between 1840 and 1860. The wars raged for quite a long period of time during that period, and the British became victorious. What happened was that trying to stop the illegal opium trade, the authorities in China actually set fire to a huge shipment of 20,000 bales of opium worth millions of pounds even in those days to the British merchants. And when the Chinese refused to do anything about it, to make any reparations for this destruction of this great shipment, eventually word got back to Queen Victoria and she authorised the British troops to invade China, supporting the British East India Company, who had troops of their own. China was defeated, and Hong Kong, as a result of that defeat, the agreement was that Hong Kong would become a British colony. And in addition to that, China paid millions of pounds in silver in reparation for the lost opium. So China was totally humiliated in that situation. Then soon after, from 1850 to 1864, there was a 14-year civil war taking place in China. And that was as a result of China's flirtation with Christianity. Many people turned to a form of Christianity in China and endeavoured to overthrow the reigning dynasty and establish Christianity in China, recorded as the worst civil war in history. So in the 1850s, China's in the grip of this corrupt leadership. The dynasty was very corrupt, and there was, as a result, poverty, famine, many, many people dying of starvation throughout China. And they were looking for a leader, looking for somebody to come forward, and a charismatic young leader emerged, and he claimed to have gone to heaven and come back as Jesus Christ on earth. Some suggestion is that he might have claimed to be the brother of Jesus Christ, but most records seem to say that he actually thought he was Jesus Christ on earth. His name was Hong Xiuquan, if I can pronounce it correctly, and he took Chinese traditions and history and culture and blended it with a Christianity as he understood it, and brought out this unique form of Christianity and formed a group of followers known as the God-Worshipping Society, or otherwise they were known as the Heavenly Kingdom. And because of all of the social unrest and the disappointments of poor harvests and great difficulties that the Chinese people were facing, he attracted millions of followers over this 14-year period. The armies that were formed as a result of the formation of this Heavenly Kingdom group fought with a tremendous religious fervour, fanaticism, we might say, in their endeavour to gain control of the country from the ruling dynasty. So it lasted, as we said, for 14 years. Ultimately, the Qing dynasty was only saved by a European army who came in to support them against this group. Initially, the British were somewhat in favour of this group because they claimed Christianity, but eventually it could be seen through that really it was an uprising without a lot of Christianity at its base. The British actually put in charge of the European army General Charles Gordon, who was a famous British general in the day, fought in a number of wars in a number of places. And ultimately, he was killed in Khartoum after this, but he rescued the Qing dynasty from the uprising. As we said, many, many millions of people had died. Charles Gordon is still famous in terms of his history, and there are statues of him in England, various parts of England, and also in Melbourne. There you can see the bottom plinth on the plinth of the statue. China, 1863-64, he rescued provinces from anarchy but would accept no reward. Very interesting character was General Gordon. but later to see his end in the Siege of Khartoum. By the time the rebellion was over, up to 50 million people had died in this civil war, recorded as, not just in China, but around the world, as the worst civil war ever in history. Now we come a little further on to the wars between China and Japan. The first Sino-Japanese war was begun in 1894. Very serious conflict, a very difficult conflict, and many people again died in this war between China and Japan. Japan was very strong militarily in those days, and they defeated China, and Taiwan became their award. Taiwan became a colony of Japan. So it slipped out of the hands of China and became a colony of Japan for the next 50 years. So from 1895, when that war ended and Japan was the victor, Taiwan was ceded to Japan and came under Japan's control for the next 50 years. Interesting background when we consider what's going on in our world today. In 1898, Britain, who had already, through the wars, the Opium Wars in 1848, had taken control of Hong Kong with no right of return to China, and Kowloon in 1860, no right of return to China. In 1898, again, through British influence over China, the new territories on the mainland of China were leased to Britain rent-free for 99 years, and the British representatives in that arrangement thought that 99 years really meant forever, but it turns out it didn't, as we know. Nevertheless, what was happening in that period of time was that China was being humiliated by many countries around. The China pie, we might say, was being divided up without China really having any say in it. You can see the people who had seat at the table in this dividing up of territories within China, or Britain and Germany and Russia and France and Japan, all during that period of conflict from 1840 to 1900, grabbing their share of the country, and China really throwing up their hands and not having much chance of doing anything about it. Now we come to 1900 and the Boxer Rebellion. The Boxer Rebellion resulted in the loss by China to an eight-nation alliance of various countries, which we'll talk about. The Boxers were called such because they had a very aggressive appearance, their physical presence. They exercised their strength. They practiced martial arts in various Asian extreme forms. And they formed a group, a wonderful name, the Secret Society of the Righteous and Harmonious Fists, known to the Western people as the Boxers. Their aim was to get rid of all foreigners from China, especially Christians. Christianity, as we said, has never had a really good time in China. It's completely foreign to them in terms of their culture, their background, their understanding and their worship of various forms of religion that they practice within. So they murdered Christian missionaries and they tortured their wives and their children and endeavoured to drive Westerners completely out of China. When they actually prepared themselves to fight, they worked themselves up in this to this tremendous mindset. They have a frenzy, a mental frenzy. They believe they're inhabited by other spirits during this time, and it actually made their bodies impervious to bullets. That's what they told themselves. Didn't quite work out that way, of course. But that's the kind of mindset that they developed as they moved themselves into this frenzy of military activity.
The Boxers were a resistance group whose primary aim was to evict all the Europeans from China. The movement started in the countryside as successive poor harvests impoverished ever more Chinese families. The Boxers trained themselves in fighting techniques and even claimed to be in possession of special powers. They vowed to rid China of all Europeans.
This movement, the Righteous and Harmonious Fists, became very strong, and the Chinese leaders actually supported this Boxer Rebellion and sent the National Army, the Imperial Chinese Army, to lay siege to all of the main foreign embassies there in Beijing, as we call it today, Peking, the headquarters of all of the foreign embassies with their citizens, their soldiers. And the embassies held out against both the Boxers and the Chinese army for a total of 55 days. It was a terrible siege, 55 days at Peking, until a huge relief force arrived, the Eight Nation Alliance, as it's called, from countries including Britain, the United States, Japan, Russia and Europe. And they brought in thousands of soldiers and heavy artillery, and ultimately China was defeated. The Boxers and the Imperial Army were defeated and humiliated and put under heavy sanctions. And so this humiliation of China continued. And as we said, that's a result of what was placed upon them in the curse by Noah through Canaan and Canaan's descendants, including the Chinese, especially in these last days, the last known descendants from Canaan, and that is the Sinites. So China's last dynasty, the Qing dynasty, was weakened, it was humiliated, under the heel of foreign powers, lost wars, and ultimately the dynasty was overthrown in the Revolution of China in 1911. Now Japan, who'd won the Sino-Japanese War in 1895, then went to war with Russia and actually defeated Russia. Went to war with Russia over the control of Korea and showed its growing might in 1905. And the humiliation of Russia, along with other troubles of Russia, led to the Russian Revolution in 1917. That's another subject, of course. So now we're looking at the 20th century and China, which has tried to assert itself and begun to assert itself and wants to be known as the Middle Kingdom, that is, the Central Kingdom of the world. And that's why they like to refer to it fairly frequently now as the Middle Kingdom. Now, the unrest in China led to civil war. As we said, the Qing Dynasty ended and the revolutionaries declared the Republic of China in that period, 1911-1912. Now that revolution continued without a lot of organisation. In 1921, political infighting saw within the revolutionaries the formation of the Chinese Communist Party. So this year, the Chinese Communist Party celebrated 100 years since 1921. 1927-28, millions of the communists were executed because of this ongoing civil unrest, and the Nationalist Party, led by Chiang Kai-shek, executed millions of the communists at that time. So 6 years after the forming of the Communist Party, millions of them were put to death by Chiang Kai-shek and his group. In 1931, this unrest continued, and really a civil war began between the Nationalists and the Communist Red Army, and that continued for another 18 years to after the Second World War, from 1931. In 1934, a few years into the civil war, the Communist Red Army is facing imminent defeat in the south of China by the Nationalists, and they were led, of course, as we said, by Chiang Kai-shek. But 85,000 communist troops broke free and retreated from the conflict. Down there in the south, you can see the beginning of the Red Path there. And they trekked through a very, very difficult, dangerous era and eventually came over the period 1934 to 1935 up into the north and regrouped. But this year-long trek was called the Long March, known as the Long March, led by Mao Zedong. And through this very difficult journey, where there was starvation and lots of hardship, military skirmishes with the Nationalist enemy, and Mao's troops were literally decimated from 85,000 at the start, over a period of just over a year, to just 8,000 men. But after the long march and they got to the north, they found their supporters would gather to them there, and they were able to regroup and build a mighty new army. So from 1935, the communist forces became much, much stronger. And eventually, right through until 1949, that conflict continued until Mao's communists actually drove out Chiang Kai-shek and his 2 million soldiers to the island of Taiwan. So that's the beginning of the situation that we have in Taiwan now, beginning in 1949, when the Nationalists retreated to Taiwan and the Communist Party took over the control of China. Now, during this time, the Second World War was beginning, but before the Second World War actually began, the Japanese began another conflict with China. In 1937, of course, the Second World War didn't start until 1939. So the 2 years before the beginning of World War II, the Japanese were involved in another great conflict with mainland China. And as a result of the support by the Chinese of the Western forces against Japan and the defeat of Japan at the end of the Second World War, Taiwan actually reverted back to China. But here's some detail about the Second Sino-Japanese War.
With the city of Peking already under Japanese control, troops continue to pour into China from Japan. Whether recent disturbances between the two countries will result in openly declared war is still uncertain. At any rate, mobilization is proceeding on a nationwide basis in Japan, and the influx of troops has a sinister look. China's aspect is as warlike as that of Japan, as her armies massing near the border of the province of Hebei march along the Great Wall. General Sung is the local commander. Chiang Kai-shek, China's premier and generalissimo, inspects the Chinese air force and troops. The general has declared that negotiations for a peaceful settlement are no longer to be considered.
Yes, during the Second World War, China, which was very weakened by its own civil war, sided with the Allies. Of course, the Nationalists were in charge under Chiang Kai-shek at the time. They decided to support in whatever way they could. The West, combining with the West to endeavour to defeat Japan, who were oppressing them at that time. And as a result of the end of the Second World War, Japan being defeated, the Allies awarded Taiwan back to China. The Civil War continued after the end of World War II, and Mao came out victorious, and Chiang Kai-shek was defeated and retreated with his 2 million strong army back to Taiwan, across to Taiwan. The situation continued on the mainland underneath the communists, who now had total control, and Chairman Mao became the long-term leader on the mainland, and we have what we know as Communist China. From 1958 came the Great Leap Forward, as Chairman Mao tries to increase the prosperity of China by transforming the agricultural base of China's society into an industrial base. And he imposed a commune system, no private farming, it would all be handled by the state, and the farmers were driven off the land, and others were put there to farm according to the rules imposed by the Communist Party. Well, what happened was that the plan totally failed. And over that four-year period, the harvest failed and famine followed, and there were more than 40 million people who died during that time. And so that Great Leap Forward was put on the back burner. And from 1966 came the Cultural Revolution and a new Maoist philosophy of how people should behave as members of the Communist Party. That's imposed, and anybody in the party who didn't agree with that approach was purged. Millions of non-supporters were executed during that period of time.
There was to be a new revolution, a cultural revolution, a revolution in people's thinking.
We went to Beijing. Mao received us after we arrived. We woke up in the middle of the night because in the morning we are going to walk through Tiananmen Square to see our great leader. He was excited. We thought he was a god.
Inspired by Mao, the Red Guards went wild in their enthusiasm to keep the revolution alive. They worshipped Mao as their leader and follow his instructions without question.
The Cultural Revolution went until about 1976. Richard Nixon actually visited mainland of China, first American president to do so. And this was following his visit with Mao. Mao actually died, Chiang Kai-shek was dead, and China started to look to the West. And this is the context of our next session, China's astonishing rise after that period in the 1970s. After about 1978, China began to take hold of opportunities of trade and increased industry as a result of Western technology, and China took hold of many opportunities to begin their rise to where they are today. And the question we're asking ourselves now is war with China inevitable? Well, we'll be looking at session four next, but here's a preview of what's happening in China militarily at the present time and the approach of the current ruler, Xi Jinping, to preparations for war.
练兵备战，鲜明导向，坚定不移，把军事训练摆在战略位置，作为中心工作，抓住不放，抓出成效。要坚持领导带头，以上率下，坚持实战实训，连战连训。
So please move on now to part four, where we're looking at China's astonishing rise.